Well, the United States, a partial government shutdown has dragged into its fourth consecutive week as President Donald Trump and Democrats fail to settle their scores over funding a border wall. The stalemate has led to the closure of at least 25% of the federal operation since December 22nd. Air travelers have also had to wait for more than an hour to get through domestic checkpoints at Atlanta Airport. The shutdown has also put on hold the Federal Aviation Administration's approval of aircraft. Trump is demanding $5.7 billion from Congress for building a border wall with Mexico. The U.S. president has warned that the partial shutdown will continue unless he receives the money. To discuss that, we're joined by our correspondent Colin Campbell, joining us live from Washington, D.C. He's been keeping a close watch on these developments ever since it began, and also we are joined by Keith Preston, chief editor of AttackTheSystem.com, joining us live from Richmond. Thank you very much, Mr. Preston, for joining us. Now, Colin, let's start with you. It is the fourth week now. No one thought the government shutdown would last this long. Is there an end in sight?
Well, not right now, as it looks, apparently because of the impasse that Congress has with the president. And of course, this is really House Democrats and President Trump. Let's keep it very brief and binary here. This is because House, when you look at the Senate, which is ruled by Republicans, they won't put the bills to the floor and they won't support any legislation that the president doesn't already approve of. So really, this is a blockade between what House Democrats say they are not going to pay for, and this is an estimated $5.7 billion, $6 billion, however you want to look at it, for the construction of a wall that that would partition the border at the southernmost part of the United States, and what the president wants, and that is border security with the inclusion of this wall. Now, these aren't mutually exclusive, but they can be, and I think this is the primary reason that the president is not trying to negotiate with Democrats. He believes that without a wall, there cannot be proper border security, even though Democrats have put forth several different types of bills and offers and types of strategies that would secure the border without having to build a billions-dollar wall that many people say would not even be successful. Just recently, they found a tunnel coming from Mexico into Arizona, going obviously into the ground, into the United States, where it was used to smuggle drugs. Obviously, even if a wall was built, tunnels could still be made. And this is just one of myriad tunnels that have been found between the Mexico and U.S. border. Other experts have said that a wall would not be effective because there are other ways of getting over the wall or through the wall. Just a few weeks ago, there was a picture of a wall being sawed through. There was a picture of a wall that had been sawed through, and this could also happen. So again, the big problem here is what Democrats don't want to pay for and what the president is mandating that Democrats put up the money for when creating immigration reform.
Thank you very much, Colin. Now let's turn to Richmond and talk to Keith. Thank you very much, sir. Now, how important is this wall? Is it really worth getting about 800,000 federal workers stranded in the middle of this fight between the president and Congress?
Well, it's important to the president, obviously, and it's important to his constituents. We have to understand this in terms of the wider partisan divide that exists in the United States. Immigration has become one of those issues that is extraordinarily divisive, and in many ways it symbolizes a wider cultural divide that exists in the society in terms of different visions of what the society should be about and what kinds of policies there should be. Immigration has become an issue like in the past gay marriage or abortion or something like that. So it's one of these kinds of symbolic political and cultural issues that represents very different visions that different people have in terms of what kind of society they want to have in the United States. This issue is very important, obviously, to Donald Trump's base, to his hardcore supporters. One of the main things that he campaigned on back in 2016 was building a wall around the Mexican border. And for him to save face, to have any kind of credibility with his constituents, he has to look like he's fighting for that. If he's seen as wishy-washy on this question, or if he's seen as caving to the other side or giving in, he's going to lose a lot of credibility among his own supporters. So that's really the position that the president is in. Of course, the Democrats in the House, they are in a totally opposite position in the sense that their supporters elected them in part because they want them to oppose various policies that the president is trying to carry out. But one of those is this idea of building the wall. And the wall has become more than just a practical issue of whether or not, well, will the wall work, or will it have the effect of curbing illegal immigration or drug smuggling or human trafficking or whatever the issues are perceived to be. More than that, I think it's a symbolic issue. It's very similar to the issue that existed and that has existed in recent years about the Confederate monuments. It's way beyond what practical value in the wall has or what actual pragmatic purpose it serves. There's room for debate on that, obviously, and then people can make arguments about that. But I think much more than that, it's become a symbolic issue that represents this wider partisan and political division and the wider cultural division that exists in the society. And for this reason, the two sides are digging in their heels, and they're not going to budge an inch until they really have no choice but to do so. But this could drag out for a while, this standoff between the president and the House. And I agree with what the previous speakers said, that this is really a conflict between the president and the House Democrats and the rest of the government, and the public is caught in the middle. But this is likely to play out for a good while, because we do have these kinds of polarized feelings that we have in the wider society, and that's now being played out in the political process over this issue that's become much more than just an issue over a pragmatic issue over border security and all of that. It's become this very powerful symbolic cultural and political issue.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Keith Preston. Now, in order to get the latest from the government shutdown, we have a package to see what the latest developments are.
The U.S. government is experiencing the longest shutdown in the country's history, a record President Donald Trump could get the credit for. The contentious issue has become a full-blown war between Republican Trump and Democratic lawmakers. The president is hell-bent on getting over $5 billion for a wall he's been promising to build since his election campaign. Winning the battle means so much to Trump that has made him mull declaring a national emergency to get the funding. On Monday, he said he has the absolute authority to do so, but is waiting for Democrats to resolve the issue before it's needed.
I have the absolute legal right to call it, but I'm not looking to do that because this is too simple. The Democrats should say we want border security, we have to build a wall, otherwise you can't have border security. And we should get on with our lives.
Donald Trump says he's got a mandate from the American people to build the wall for border security. Likewise, the Democrats say they received a mandate from the people in the midterm elections to stop Trump from spending a huge amount of money on the wall. To Trump's chagrin, a new poll shows a vast majority of Americans blame him for the shutdown. The poll conducted by SSRS showed 55% of Americans say the president is making hundreds of thousands of federal workers go without pay, while 32% blame the Democrats. On Sunday, a senior Republican senator said he has urged Trump to reopen the government for 3 weeks so negotiations over border security could happen. Trump nixed the idea of his ally too, saying he wouldn't budge an inch in the showdown with the Democrats. Much of the Trump-Democrats' duel goes back to how they see border security. Trump says only a concrete wall or a steel barrier could ward off the arrival of illegal migrants. Democrats, however, say there are so many other ways to ensure border security, including the use of technology.
But the fact is that what the president is proposing is not the best way to protect our borders, because he knows we all support border security and that there's a better way to do it. Right now, there is a path. Open up government. Let's have this discussion on where we can agree on the best ways to protect our borders, to secure our borders.
The deep standoff between the two has made some 800,000 federal workers see no end in sight to the shutdown, at least in the coming days.
Well, as it was mentioned in the package, and as our correspondent Colin Campbell, who is joining us live from Washington, D.C., also mentioned, it seems that there is no end in sight. But Colin, has this made Americans more aware of the loopholes in the Constitution and maybe too much power that the president has in order to just shut down the government to get his way?
I think that the understanding that Americans may have with the government shutdown may be amplified. I think that many Americans were already cognizant over the ramifications that a government shutdown could actually manifest, because this isn't the first time we've seen a government shutdown within this administration. We saw them during the Obama administration. I believe in the last administration, there was a shutdown for about 16 days. The longest was during the Clinton administration, I believe, and that was 21 days, the record that this current shutdown has just eclipsed over the weekend. So Americans already know that the government shutdown could have serious ramifications. They also know that the president's powers may go beyond what they would like them to go beyond. There was a lot of criticism for President Obama during his term about the use of executive orders. And to this day, President Obama has used more executive orders than President Trump, I believe. So this is one of the complaints during the Obama administration. It was one of the complaints during the Trump administration. But again, I believe Trump has amplified the understanding that Americans have when it comes to presidential powers. And this will only be exacerbated day by day when we see TSA workers not showing up for work and airlines have to change and modify their schedules just to get people through the airport. When we see air traffic controllers have other issues, when we see our national parks being littered and trees being cut down, which would be illegal because there aren't people to really monitor these types of activities. I think Americans will really understand the issues behind government shutdowns, the powers that presidents have in trying to mitigate these shutdowns, and what they would like for the future when it comes to presidential powers and how Washington works.
Thank you very much. Now, Keith, let's turn back to you. Well, it seems that the golden key to unlocking this impasse is in the hands of the Republicans in the Senate. Do you think that they might take steps in order to convince the president to let go of this game that he has started simply to get his way, at least open up the government and then start negotiating about different ways to ensure border security?
Well, it could come to that. I think that's going to depend on how much pressure is being exercised on the Republicans from various forces. Now, if they start getting an awful lot of angry messages from their constituents and they see that this situation has become a political liability for their own, either for themselves in terms of their reelection or for their party or whatever, it's possible that the Republicans in Congress could certainly move to essentially override the president and reopen the government. There's also an issue, as the previous speaker was saying, if certain essential services are seen as not being provided, I think transportation-related services are probably going to be the most the issue that's most impacted in terms of how the general public experiences this. And also we have to consider there are about 800,000 people who are essentially out of work and not getting a paycheck at this point. And those people, you know, are constituents, are political constituents in various districts and so forth. So it could be that a range of political pressures could come to bear on the Republicans, in which case that they might seek to actually try to defy or override the president. Of course, we have to understand that Donald Trump is not particularly liked by many of the Republicans in Congress. Many of them view him as a kind of interloper or usurper in their party and things like that. There's been a great deal of division within the Republican Party since Trump emerged as a political figure in the party. So it's certainly true that there's no love lost between Trump and others, some of the Republicans in Congress. So if this situation continues to drag out, if the Republicans start feeling pressure from elsewhere to put an end to the situation, yeah, I think they could certainly move against the president in that way. But I think, though, that it's going to be a while before it comes to that. I think they generally would be hesitant to do that for a range of political reasons and in terms of their relationship both with the president as well as just wider political forces in generally. So I don't see that happening anytime soon. But depending on how long this drags out and what the consequences of this are, yeah, that could certainly happen in the long run.
Now, as a final note, I would like both of you to give me your thoughts about the fact that America has always tried to be a role model as far as democracy is concerned. It doesn't seem, Colin, that America is really the right role model as far as the international arena is concerned. Other countries looking at what's happening in America, what do you think?
There are a lot of Americans right now who are keenly aware that we're being laughed at in other parts of the world. Yes, the U.S. is usually a paradigm for, in many cases, civil rights, for democracy, for equality. And a lot of these values or virtues, however you want to describe them, seem to have been diminished over the years. And I think that many pundits are very wary of the direction that America is going in, especially when it comes to the polarization in Washington, when it comes to the care and the empathy that we have for each other. When you look at what has happened at the border, with children being torn away from their mother's arms, with children being kept in cages, when you look at the killings of black men, black women by the police force, when you look at some of these social inequalities and these social crises that the U.S. has been going through, there is serious concern about the future that America will take and who will our next leaders be and how will they try to change the direction so that the U.S. can once again be a paradigmatic emblem of something to aspire to rather than a country to ridicule.
Thank you very much, Keith. And your thoughts on this final note, very quickly, please.
Well, historically, yeah, the United States was considered something of a landmark nation in terms of its achievements and as one of the early modern liberal republics and as the leader of the so-called free world during the World Wars and during the Cold War, things like that. That history is certainly true. However, certainly that's not really what's going on in the world today. I mean, if we see the role that the United States plays in the world today, we see that the United States is really the world's number one aggressor nation internationally. That's before we even get to any domestic issues. And even on domestic issues, we see the United States has the world's highest incarceration rate of any nation in the world. We see that the United States has the widest divisions between rich and poor of any industrialized nation, or just about any industrialized nation, certainly any Western industrialized nation. And we see the dysfunctional political system that we have. We see really the failure of much of the mainstream American media to report on all the serious issues. Those have degenerated into purely political propaganda outlets. We see the oligarchy. We essentially have an oligarchy in the United States of financial elites and corporate elites that control the political process. There's been numerous studies that indicating that we really are living under an oligarchy in the United States, not a democracy. So, and we could keep going with this. But the United States certainly has lost its position, I think, in terms of any kind of moral authority as a leading democracy. The United States is now one of the most retrograde nations of any country that is normally thought of as a democratic country. So all of that is problems are certainly there.
Thank you very much, both of you. Colin Campbell, joining us live from Washington, D.C., and Keith Bresson from Richmond with your thoughts on the government shutdown. Of course, with all the hopes for the government shutdown to end as soon as possible, federal workers are really being hurt. And it does not seem that President Donald Trump has really delivered on that Make America Great Again slogan that brought him to power. And that brings us to the end of this news review.